Kirsten Johnson is a filmmaker and cinematographer who specializes in documentaries with a distinctly left-leaning politics. She's worked on Citizen Four, the film about Edward Snowden, and Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11. Her latest project is something very, very different. It's much more personal, and it's called Camera Person. It's about her, about Kirsten Johnson, and she met up with Tad Friend, a staff writer at the magazine. Tad, so you spent some time together with her recently. What did you do?
I did. We went out on the East River Ferry on an extremely hot afternoon, and she spent a fair amount of time complaining about how hot it was in a very cheerful way. She's quite tall. She's nearly 6'2", and she's sort of appealingly clumsy, as she acknowledges, and she manages to somehow see, you know, what's going on around you. And I felt it was great to go with her just as, you know, someone who also was interested in trying to figure out groups of people or individuals and to sort of look, try to borrow her eye in a sense and see how she frames things and where she looks to catch a moment or a scene or a dynamic. And it was really sort of professionally interesting, as well as the fact that I just liked her company because she's totally charming.
Tell me about the film.
The film is sort of an amazing collection of outtakes from the movies she's made over the years, many of them having to do with massacres and genocide, which sounds very depressing. But then they're intermixed with very personal film. She's sort of home movies, actually. She took it home with her mother, who has Alzheimer's, kind of looking over her shoulder and seeming surprised and bewildered by who this person is with a camera and why she's filming her.
Does the film begin to make any narrative sense at all?
It makes a narrative sense in the sense that you begin to weave together in your own head a narration of who this cinematographer is. I think when we're watching documentaries, we rarely think about, you know, who shot this film and does she eat yogurt and does she have a dog or a cat? You know, you just are interested in the people in the frame. But the way in which it's shot suddenly makes you very curious about who she is, and you begin to feel like the intense human connection that she has with the people she's seeing, and her sense of curiosity and warmth. And her camera becomes almost like a an infrared camera, really. It follows people around, and you sense that she has an instinct for who the person is who is most alive at any given moment in the frame.
So I like that.
Right. Yeah. So one thing I was curious about is, like,
Sorry.
Do you feel like you, when you said earlier you were looking for shots, is it just a sort of instinctive thing, oh, that's a shot? What elements do you need to be present for you to think that's a shot?
Well, I mean, a lot of times it's just what I'm attracted to. Like, he's gone now, but there was a man who had these amazing jeans that were all shades of blue and very strange. And there was something happening with the interaction between his pants, these blue seats, the sky, that just told a story of blue to me that I wanted to film. And it had nothing to do with my, you know, mission.
Well, and that's one of the things actually I really loved about the film was how I think of a film as visual, but actually I felt like in this movie you got a sense of emotionally what it was like to be that person, whoever it was. You're clearly, like, you know, not just there to shoot this person from a neutral standpoint, but to say, you know, I have a camera, but I'm here. We're having a human interaction.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, a lot of times pointing a camera at a person, you know, we can say it gives them a voice or gives them a chance to speak, but a lot of times I think it can feel really isolating to be alone on the other side of a camera. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that never makes it into movies, the things that you're saying to people to try to, you know, help somebody feel better in a moment when they feel terrible, basically. Right. Yeah.
The moment in the film, there are many, but the one that particularly comes to mind is when you're talking to someone who's getting an abortion in Alabama.
Yeah.
And I think, I believe it's you who says that we've all had unplanned pregnancies.
I don't really think I can do a second child not by myself. That's why I just feel like a bad person, a bad female, because I let it happen a second time. And I told myself not to do it, but it happened anyways.
The only rule I'm going to give you is you may not say I'm not a good person anymore, because that is not the case. Mm-hmm. An unintended pregnancy is an unintended pregnancy. That's all it is. That's all it is. So, no more.
Okay.
Okay? I'm not kidding.
Yeah, me too. I support her.
And
it's also happened to all of us.
Yeah.
We've all had unintended pregnancies.
So she's not a cinematographer. She's not a filmmaker who wants to hide. She's like Dionne Arbus, who wanted her subjects to be engaged with her in some way.
I think in this movie you get that sense, but as I said, many of the shots were outtakes from other directors' movies, but she makes them the centerpiece of her film, and you feel like in her film, yes, she absolutely wants to connect with the audience. And when you finally see a glimpse of her in the mirror near the end, it's incredibly moving, like, because you think you're seeing a glimpse of her in the mirror as her mother, who has Alzheimer's, is brushing her hair on camera, and then her mother is not quite sure who this person is, but she knows she should be tender toward her, and we feel the same way.
Who's this guy? Who's that guy?
That's who I married.
That's who you married?
Uh-huh.
Who is he to me?
You know him too?
I know him too. I've known him all my life.
No kidding.
Yeah, I'm serious. And look, here's me. It's a teeny tiny baby. With that little smile, right? Around. That's that little smile I do.
Okay.
How's it go? Wait, let me show me. Show me how's it? I like to smile without opening my mouth, right?
Yes. Isn't
that a cute little baby?
Well, don't take a picture when your hair's messed up.
Can you fix it? There we go. Oh, yeah. That's looking good. You getting me?
Trying to get you, huh?
That's good. You're helping me.
Yeah.
There's a footage of your mom with Alzheimer's and a very sort of personal up-close footage, and then also with your dad and your two kids. How did you decide to include that more private material?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I struggle with a lot is how, in quotes, easy it is for us to ask people we don't know about some of the most terrible things that they have experienced and then to use that footage in films. And I knew, in the case of my mother, that she's a woman who never really wanted to be filmed and very much cared about her own self-presentation in the world. And she would have never, I mean, when she got diagnosed with Alzheimer's, she didn't want anybody to know about it. She wanted to hide it. She would never have wanted footage of her with Alzheimer's to be the footage of her that exists in the world. And so for me, it embodies this idea of betrayal that is deeply complex, right? I mean, I think that footage absolutely shows how much I love my mother and what a loving and gentle relationship existed, and yet it is also absolutely a betrayal of her. You know, the first time I looked at it again, I couldn't believe how much it brought her back to me. And I was like, I was so grateful I had filmed it, even though, like, all of these questions aside, right, and all of the emotion really was in it. And it felt very clear to me that I must use it.
Right. And I guess that the thing that's interesting, another thing that's interesting about the movie is the sense that you could get to the bottom of all these stories if you could stay, but that sometimes there's not enough time. People go away.
And, yeah. I mean, you miss it. You miss it.
You
lose it.
But also
it. Yeah.
People die. And like, so much of the film is about places that were horrible, atrocious things occurred, and people got massacred. Like, that's the sort of thing you explicitly show us in the middle of the film, is like, whether or not you planned it, you were drawn to places of death and destruction.
Well, I mean, I think one of the things that I've come to realize over time, not necessarily that I'm drawn to death and destruction, but that death and destruction is in the world, and there's invisible evidence of it in many places in the world, sort of like trauma. And, you know, in some ways, the film for me is acknowledging my mother's loss and acknowledging that we all, as human beings, we lose people we love. So we all suffer these sort of
invisible,
fundamental traumas.
Invisible
losses. Yeah, that we carry with us as part of being humans. And the evidence of that in people's bodies, in spaces, I think I became very interested in how I could translate the invisibility of what had transpired.
Making darkness visible, in a sense.
Yeah.
I told her, I have tremendous envy for any documentary filmmaker, because I always feel like you know, it takes me so long, and maybe you feel the same way as a writer, to like say, you know, he was a withered old man who was picking up a pen with a grimace and then a, you know, flash of lightning crossed the sky. But meanwhile, and you're doing all this sort of laborious setting up, and in a documentary, it's all there visible within, you know, half a second. Once I got that grievance out of the way, I actually learned there was a, when we came off the ferry at the 34th Street Pier, she was focusing on a nurse who was taking a nap on a bench.
My peripheral vision thing, like, I want to know the story of that woman right there. It looks to me like she's a nurse who just got off her shift, probably at Bellevue, that's right around the corner from here, and is sleeping there. So if I walk around, I could confirm that's a nurse's uniform.
Right.
You know.
And she filmed her from afar, and there was a fence in the foreground and a fence in the background behind the nurse. So it actually, in the way she filmed it, it looked like a kind of green fish caught in a net.
But the shot's one thing if you frame it within all of the webbing, right? You have no idea where she is or if she's suspended in something. And then if I shot it wider like that with more context, you understand a little bit more where she is, right?
Excuse us.
Are you sleeping?
Oh, hi. I'm just taking a nap on my break.
That's what we were just wondering.
Oh,
are you a nurse?
Yeah, just break time.
Where do you work?
At NYU.
At NYU.
Yeah,
which department do you work on?
Postpartum.
Postpartum?
Yeah.
Oh, go back to sleep. Don't
no,
bother
I just
you.
I just take a time out on my breaks.
Enjoy.
Peaceful.
So
there you go.
There you go.
Mostly confirmed.
Yeah, mostly confirmed.
Except for the Bellevue part.
Right. Yeah,
close.
Postpartum.
Yeah.
Could be depressing, as the case may be.
Could be
joyful too.
Yeah.
Well, and you had no idea who this person was. Was it even a person? It was just sort of a symbol. And then she showed, you know, you come around the corner and it begins to make a little bit more sense. And you go in for the close up and you see the person.
But you saw how suddenly all the different lens lengths changed the story completely.
Right.
And did you see how beautiful she was in the close up when I got over to here? That told a totally different story than from the other angles.
Turned away.
Yeah.
And showed you how much of any kind of storytelling is where you choose to focus and how you choose to frame things.
And you don't think in writing, too, that's the case?
I totally think that's the case.
Yeah.
I just think how nice to be able to do it, you know, simply by turning your hand a little bit on your shoulder rather than having to gin up paragraphs.
God, we writers are always complaining.
We are. That's what we do.
Ted, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kirsten Johnson's new film is called Camera Person. She spoke with The New Yorker's Tad Friend.